Well, if this looks familiar, it should. Mike and I were talking about this a while back, and as fertilizer prices went high and people started talking about fertilizers back in 2008, really the only time people worry about them is when they're expensive. And we thought, well, people really ought to understand the processing and all the complicated technology that goes into getting this granule that goes out in the field. You think, well, it just shows up, right? And we'll complain about the price. But there's a lot more that goes into it. So I really appreciate Mike talking about phosphorus, and I'm going to talk about a presentation available about potassium, where it comes from and how it gets to the form that we try to nourish our plants. And we're hoping next year we'll have a presentation on nitrogen that'll help you. We don't mine the nitrogen, but there's still a lot of very complicated processing that goes into getting nitrogen fertilizer. So again, these are both very abbreviated versions of the full presentation. And I taught soil fertility for many years, and I guess I was blissfully ignorant of a lot of this. I just talked about the soil fertility part, not having any idea really where it came from, except it came out of a bag or fertilizer spreader. And so I think I sort of did my students an injustice, really talking about this as a natural resource, as in a complicated process in nutrient management. So potassium is a common element in the world. It's about the seventh most common or abundant element in the world. And really, you need to talk about this as a cycle, too. We don't just get it out of the ground, put it on the plants, and forget about it. So again, there's complete notes that accompany each of these slides. We're going to do a whirlwind presentation. We're not going to go through all the details, but just realize that all of these things are cycles and processes, not just a one-event application. So there's some description for those that need about the role of potassium in plants, how it's an essential nutrient involved in many different metabolic activity and functions in the plant, but that it stays as monovalent potassium. Most of the other nutrients go through all kinds of changes. We talked about the nitrogen cycle within a plant, very complicated, as well as phosphorus. Potassium is simple, just monovalent potassium. When the plants die, the cells rupture, the monovalent potassium leaches out again. So this is a nice one to work with. Talk about potassium in animal nutrition, too. Essential in lots of roles, but also in the human body or an animal, it stays present as potassium plus. It's not stored, so it needs to be replaced on a regular basis. From the Food and Drug Administration, their guidelines say that, those bottom lines, diets containing food that are good sources of potassium and low in sodium reduce the risk of high blood pressure and stroke. And then it goes on. So we know that potassium is essential for plants as well as for animals. So when we're talking about potassium coming out of the ground in the form of potash fertilizers, it's important for the plants, but also for animals and for our own health. So again, think of this as a whole cycle rather than something coming out of a fertilizer bag. A little bit on the history of potash. And the symbol K, which throws people off, comes from Latin word talium. Potash, the old method was to actually get ash from burnt trees, concentrate that, and then use that both for fertilizer, but it was also very important for glass making. That was probably more important than the fertilizer, even. The very first patent that was issued in the United States was signed by George Washington. It was a patent for an improved process for making potash. Interesting. There's some description in the presentation about where potash comes from. The size of these dots is indicative of the size of the potash production. You see that it's located in many countries. The largest dot coming from Canada. I'll get this figured out. Potash comes from different sources, though. Mike talked about these underground deposits. Potash is the same way. It comes from under ancient seas that are now buried. Some of these seas are still at the surface, so we can see these processes actually happening. The Dead Sea, we have potash that's extracted from there. If you fly into Salt Lake City, you can see the potash ponds where they're extracting that. Lots of different potash minerals that are mined, the chemistry and the processing and everything is tailored to what mineral you're actually getting. The sylvite, the KCl there, another one that's common, the langbeinite, which is down towards the bottom, that's commercially known as Trio or KMag, which is on the back of all the programs this year. Interesting. That's this mineral langbeinite. potassium nitrate, lots of different potassium salts that are available. So how do we get it into a form that we can use? If it comes from shaft mining, and I'll give you some examples of that, solution mining, or the evaporation of the brines that are now at the surface. And these are all done throughout the world. So here's an example of the deposits in Saskatchewan. They're about 1,000 meters deep. And so all of a sudden you think, yeah, there's a lot of effort that has to go into getting this potash out of the ground. So they'll typically dig a big shaft, and then it's mined, such as you might imagine a coal mine or something like that. So they're driving these vehicles down a kilometer underneath the earth's surface. Going quickly, again, there's a lot more detail in the speaker notes you can use for teaching, but just show you some of the pictures of potash production, lots of different mining machines that are tailored to the specific ore body. So you can see the miners there with their little headlamps on the picture on the left. Some pretty good-sized machines. So these all have to come down the shaft and be put together underground. And these are called continuous mining machines that just continue against the face of the potash deposit. Here's a couple other ones. So these just grind against that potash ore. These are well-suited when the potash deposit is very uniform and straight. Let's see. I took one out. Okay. This is another technique that's used where they blast the potash out of seams. So here he's putting ammonium nitrate into the hole, and he'll blast the face of this cavern off and extract the potassium salts. Then it has to be transported to the top. Sometimes they take it in these shuttle cars. Other times they have conveyor belts that run for many, many miles underground that take it to the base of the shaft so it can be transported to the surface. So these conveyor belts are running all through the mine, going to a storage facility, going through a preliminary crusher, and then being hoisted to the surface for further processing. The raw ore has to be crushed. It's all kinds of sizes. It's usually crushed between 1 and 4 millimeters, and then that's processed further. We'll talk about next. Okay, we've got the ore to the surface. We've crushed it. Now we need to separate out the various salts. We don't want the sodium salts. You get a lot of sodium chloride with the potassium chloride. So the first step is to wash it. And if you wash it in a saturated solution, if it's super saturated, it won't dissolve the potassium salts, right? But it'll wash away some of the other salts. So that's the first step. A lot of chemistry involved in the processing here. So that bottom slide, it's gone through its preliminary washing. The next step is the flotation separation. Some interesting, there's an amine organic chemical that's mixed with the raw ore. The amine coats the potassium chloride but does not coat the sodium chloride. So that coating now attracts bubbles in a froth, and it floats the potassium chloride to the solution, and the sodium chloride that does not have a bubble sinks to the bottom and separates it out. So then they can just take this floating potassium chloride off of the surface and dispose the sodium chloride. So here's the froth. The frothy potassium chloride that's being separated. You notice there's red and white. And you may have seen potassium chloride that is red and white. Much of it contains trace amounts of iron, of hematite, and that's just present in the ore itself. And so some potash fertilizers are red, some are white. Doesn't affect the agronomic qualities at all, though. Another interesting way to separate out the potassium salts is to use this heavy media separation. And they change the specific gravity of the solution, and the salts separate. And I think in the interest of time, I better not talk more about that. Okay, then it gets washed and screened and sized. So here's the potash that's getting washed and then coming out the conveyor belt dry. And then it can be pressed, crushed, screened, you name it. Lots of different things happen to make the potash that we're going to get into our fertilizer bag. In California, we use a lot of solution-grade potassium chloride. That has to be very clear and very pure so it doesn't plug the emitters. And so that goes through a crystallization step to make it pure and get rid of that red iron that's usually not a problem. Another technique that's used when water is limiting, you can see these are pretty water-intensive processes, is a dry separation where potassium chloride and sodium chloride react different to a static charge. And so by running this through a charged field, it separates out these salts. Again, all kinds of interesting processing that goes into the fertilizer that we use so casually. Solution mining, this is another technique that's used where they pump the water down into the salt shafts, hot water, and then they pump the hot brine out again. So no miners actually go down into the mine itself. It's just hot water, goes down, dissolves the salts, and brings it back to the surface. And there's a large plant. This one is in Moab, Utah, where they do this very successfully. But this is done throughout the world. And this is at the surface of the, this is at the Great Salt Lake in the Dead Sea, where they selectively precipitate different salts, moving the salt from one basin to another, and then allow that to be produced. Okay, potassium chloride is less than half of what is in that ore. The rest of it is primarily sodium chloride and some silt and clay. What do you do with that? Well, right now, we usually just put it in a big pile. And so that's a big mountain of mostly sodium chloride. Sometimes they can put that back in the mine again after they're finished, but it's not really an environmental problem. It turns into a rock-like mass, but still it's one of the byproducts of potassium production. Mike mentioned shipping this to where it's needed. That's a complicated industry by itself, and then it's distributed throughout the world. Just to give you some idea of where potash comes from and where it goes, those arrows go everywhere, don't they? So a lot of complicated, big business that's involved in fertilizer. So in the presentation, there's also a discussion about each potash source, MOP, muriate of potash, langbeinite, potassium thiosulfates, some of the other things that you might find useful as more specialty fertilizers. And then what happens when you put potash in the soil? Well, it doesn't really matter what form you put it in. The potassium is the same. So how do you choose which one? Well, it's the price, and it's the anion that comes along with the potassium, because the potassium itself is identical. A little bit about crop requirements, and there's some agronomy in these presentations, and different ways to apply potash, through sprinkler systems, through foliar systems, lots of different ways that it's used. So that's just sort of a quick highlight of some of the things that are in the potash presentation. You've heard about the phosphate presentation. I think they'd be real useful teaching tools and really encourage you to use them however you can. So, any questions? Anything you want to know about potash? Come back next year, we'll have something for nitrogen, I think.
And how long are these full additions?
They're about 40 slides, more or less. We have a narrated version also, and it takes about a half hour. If you want to just start the narrated version, and that goes through the notes, and you want to just sit in the back of the class and wait till it's over, it's probably about a half hour if you want to do the narrated version, and those aren't posted yet. Yes? Not yet. There are uses for sodium chloride, and it is mined, and but we're producing it a lot faster than we're using it. But it's for road things, and it's not a real pure sodium chloride either. It's not human or food grade. So right now we're just stacking it for the most part. So maybe when the mines are finished, we can start putting it back down. But they don't want to block the tunnels, you know, while they're still mining. So it just gets piled up. Okay, all you wanted to know about phosphorus and potash, right? Mike, did you have a comment too, or?
No, the question came up about the, for example, Great Salt Lakes, they do produce sodium chloride.
Yeah, that's right. Out of the surface brines, they do. That's right. Thank you. And speaking of sodium chloride, they mine it near the salt flats also. There's a lot of potassium up by the salt flats. And there they put the sodium chloride on the Bonneville racetrack to resurface it every year. So the racers will have a good hard surface. Interesting.
We need to move on to the next one. Otherwise we're going to get behind. But
we'll
take some questions after that.